And we are back with episode 338 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and attention Emmy voters, the Cold War is over.
And this is Bronson from Australia, and attendant Emmy voters, that's awful rude of you to make that particular omission.
Yes, and all of Tatiana says, why did you leave us out? But there we are. All right, we are going to be talking about, well, we still don't really know. I think we're probably going to go back to our typical round table for this particular episode because, yeah, like I said, for the Wednesday show, things are still really slow this summer. But that just leaves us more time to do many, many other things. Yay. But it's been a while since we've really been able to kind of kick back and just talk about the things that we do when we're not watching TV, or at least the TV that's new. And Bronstum wasn't around the last time we did it. So Bronstum, what you been up to other than, you know, going to the Comic-Con a couple weeks ago?
Well, that was kind of the big thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think the majority of my time has been taken up by work and being a little bit ill. But I managed to squeeze in some a bit of TV viewing and movie stuff here and there. I saw Pacific Rim last week. And that film is dumb as a bag of rocks, but so, so fun. it's a great movie to watch with a few mates and ideally like a few beers and just sort of say snarky comments at one another, which is admittedly a bit tough to do in a cinema, but you can manage it. At least that's what me and my friends were doing when we were watching it, just kind of kept leaning over and whispering jokes to one another.
You haven't been to a cinema in the United States recently.
The special effects and stuff like that were awesome. The characters are one-dimensional, but they're just like these... It's this intentionally cardboard archetypal sort of thing. Like, no one is meant to be a particularly well-rounded protagonist. And for the most part, what they then did is bolstered by getting just actors who are really, really good at... really, really good at just bringing him to the screen. I thought Idris Elba was fantastic. Like, he's basically... At the end of the film, he basically has to deliver the Bill Pullman Independence Day speech, and he nails it. It's so awesome. For a moment there, you kind of get into it. And Ron Perlman was crazy fun as this back alley kaiju parts dealer. Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Bern Gorman from Torchwood are these competing scientists who are just cracking jokes at one. Well, not cracking jokes, but just snarking at each other the whole time. The only two actors who I thought did a kind of a rubbish job were unfortunately the two leads who. Yeah. I'm not sure if maybe they're just taking it a bit too seriously or if they're just really, really rubbish actors, but they... I got nothing from them. I was bored when they were on screen, whereas at least all the other supporting characters, I'm just like, yeah, this is fun. That was easily my biggest problem with the film, was just two really, really unengaging leads. Other than that, these dumb as rocks characters and these big... robots fighting giant monsters. It was just cool. Just a fun, fun movie.
Yeah, it looks it. And I mean, that's pretty much what other people are saying, too. It's like, don't go there for anything other than the robot-on-monster action. It's kind of like, go there for all the reasons that you would go to and do, quote-unquote, enjoy a Transformers movie, just with perhaps without less racism and flat-out stupidity. But
yeah, exactly.
Worst fake Australian accents, though.
Yeah.
is there a certain point where you've reached the absolute, like, you know, there's absolute zero. I was
half expecting the two Australian characters because one of the it's kind of thing the most badass of the Mechas of the Jaegers is the Australian one. Mm. So naturally, it kind of gets its butt handed to it in the second last fight, so that the underdog heroes can come through. But it is this big awesome mecha, and the two pilots are this father and son team. Who one of them's clearly American, and one of them's clearly English. their Australian accents are terrible. The dialogue is so cliched, and one reviewer just really, really summed it up as like, at any moment, I was expecting one of them to challenge the other to a game of knifey spoony. And admittedly, there was also like they had a few brief through this kind of like news, like one of the characters is watching the news, and there was a kaiju attack in Sydney, and some of it was like really really awesome. Like I could like the kaiju gets, you know, gets its butt kicked and falls on Town Hall, in the middle of the CBD, which was awesome.
The only thing I couldn't believe is they didn't have it smash the Sydney Opera House.
Well, the thing is, the thing at the beginning of it, where you see the news footage where it bursts through the wall and starts attacking the Opera House and the bridge, that okay, so it bursts through the wall for the wall to be where it was, like it's supposed to be on the coast, and instead it's running through the middle of Sydney Harbour. Like that would be the equivalent of building a giant like the giant wall through the middle of the Hudson.
Right next to the Statue of Liberty, basically.
So say what you, and say what you will about the North Shore, but it was just completely, because it basically means that the wall would have had to have gone through the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Because the Sydney Harbour Bridge is crossing the harbour from the south side where the CBD is to North Sydney and then further on to Manly and stuff like that. And they just have the wall like running straight through the harbour in order to get that iconic shot of it, of the Sydney Harbour in the bridge in the background and the Opera House and stuff like that. And I'm just looking at it just like, so what? They cut off Manly? Like, I know Manly Sea Eagles fans are a bit obnoxious, but this is kind of ridiculous.
What are the creatures called? You keep repeating it.
The kaiju.
The kaiju.
Is the Japanese word for giant crazy monster.
Giant monster. Yes.
Yeah.
And don't worry, they give you the etymology right at the beginning of the movie. So, you know.
Oh yeah, that prologue admittedly was kind of terrible.
You know that there was a studio exec that came up with that, I'm sure.
And I really had no sympathy for the brother, even before I found out that he was the Brody's best mate on Homeland.
Right, yes.
I did not recognize him, and then later on my friends were just like, yeah, it was the guy from... Really? Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes him... I like him so much better now.
Well, the thing that keeps coming to my mind is that you... you keep saying that word, and unfortunately, because I've had children, and my relatives now have young ones, there's this children's show called Caillou, and I'm just envisioning this very large cartoon character just invading Sydney, and that I'm having a little bit of a brain melt at that, but anyway. It sounds dumb as some of the things that happen in the movie, but that's okay.
But basically, the thing is that it's, you know, it is widescreen mecha, and that's the other thing I find amusing is that this whole thing, you know, it's like, you know, yes, we're redoing Japanese anime, but so we're just going to call them Jaegers, which is a German word that means fighter.
Yeah.
Instead. So even though fighter it's like, you know, hunter. Almost, you know, yeah, even though it's almost exactly out of Evangelion, it's like, you know, except no, we have two people inside instead of just one person inside.
Well, okay, and here's what some people that I know have kind of had as their justification to not go to see the movie, and for me, it's more that I just haven't had time, but I guess the issue is that, okay, it's so obvious that the thing that's going to work in this, if anything, is going to be the big mecha versus monster fighting sequences that are directly out of, you know, classic Japanese anime. Yeah. And it's like, why am I going to go watch that when I've got hours upon hours of exactly that in my living room? For free, pretty much, nominal charge. There's, you know, it especially if there's not a whole lot outside of that to be a draw. And, you know, one of the complaints that I've also heard is that a lot of the fighting takes place in conditions that are meant to kind of help obscure some of the seams, so to speak, on the CGI. So it's not like it's happening in broad daylight where it's more real than real. It's all, kind of in rain and darkness and everything else like you see in trailers. So... I'm just curious, what would be your counter to that? Would you have one?
My counter to that is that it's still decently made, and it's a lot of fun to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
Fair enough, I guess.
It's Guillermo del Toro's. I just call it Guillermo del Toro's Independence Danime.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very nice.
Well, what else have you
And I will say, if you are going to go see it, at least stay through the major part of the credits.
Okay. Fair enough.
For those of you who, unlike me, who have always stayed to the end of the credits since I was a little child, at the very, very end, and it is almost to the point where even I missed it, and I will just tell you this part, they do acknowledge Ray Harryhausen and Honda, the man who created Godzilla, at the very, 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 very end of the credits. But you don't have to stay till that, since I've now told you. So, just in case you had any doubt about who they were referencing in this movie.
So I'm guessing that Nick Fury comes at the end and introduces them to the Ultron project. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else have you been up to, Ron Stum?
I've been watching a bit. That's the only movie I've seen, so I've been watching a bit of TV. I've been catching up on the British ITV series Broadchurch, which aired earlier this year in the UK and was very, very well received. It stars David Tennant and Olivia Colman, the latter of whom. At least I probably knew her best from being in a lot of Mitchell and Webb stuff. And it's this very, very... It's this very, very engaging murder mystery in a small coastal town in the south of England. And this really horrific crime and kind of confronting the fact that, like, okay, well, someone in this town had to have done it. And... it's the kind of small town where everyone knows everyone. There's, you know, some sort of secretish undercurrents and stuff like that. And basically how the two main characters are the police detectives investigating, and very much about how their perceptions of this sort of quiet coastal town are warped by having to dig into everyone's dirty laundry, how the town itself is affected by the crime and by the fallout and stuff like that. And it's this really, really fascinating, really engaging show with this big, fantastic cast of characters who sort of all managed to just kind of tread the line between sympathetic and suspicious. And I'm watching, and I'm genuinely don't know who the killer is. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to follow the clues, same as the detectives and stuff like that. And I'm feeling sympathy for their plights as they're being kind of wrecked by what's going on. David Tennant is phenomenal as this very broken, very hollow police detective who is really using this case to try and make amends for having screwed up something in the past, which sounds a little cliche, but he pulls it off. The writing is really, really strong, which surprised me because it's written entirely by Chris Chibnall, who has a really, really spotty record from Doctor Who and Torchwood. His series 7 contributions notwithstanding, and there are a lot of sort of recognizable faces in the show. Arthur Darvill is one of the townspeople. He's the Reverend. David Bradley's in it. Who's these days he's probably best known as Walder Frey, and just a whole bunch of other kind of like recognizable people in little roles. But I really it's eight, the first series is 8 episodes, and I highly recommend anyone who's interested in kind of like an interesting drama or an interesting whodunit to really check it out.
Cool. That pretty much wrap you up then, because like you said, you've been
yeah, a bit out of it.
How about you, Edmund? What have you been up to? Did we lose Edmund?
Oh, no,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I had to flick a knob there. Actually, it's in our last episode. I know, I believe Bronislaw had mentioned Gigi Edgley being at the Melbourne Oz Comic Con, and one of the side effects of the Phoenix Comic Con that was the big Babylon 5 fest for me was. Was the appearance by David Franklin and Gigi Edgley from Farscape, and also hanging around with Kurt Armbrister, who was one of the was often on the Scape cast, and which finally got me around to paying attention to Farscape, and I am now what is it, 3 episodes into season 2 and enjoying it immensely, and you know, so I know this is ancient news for all of those people who were following it back when it was first on, but for me, it is a lot of fun to finally come back to a show that I've heard so many good things about, and also to have now still what have we got, the rest of season 2, 3, and 4 and the Peacekeeper Wars to enjoy some very good space-based science fiction and some very quirky characters, and I'm also aware, you know, I've been sort of keeping up as you know, as I watch the episodes, I sort of read reviews of them, and I've sort of been keeping tabs on you know, sort of taking advantage of one of the things you can do when you're watching a series long after it's been on, of being aware that you know, no, I might be going through a rough patch, or you know, or looking forward to something that's going to be really good. And so I'm aware at the beginning of this second season that yeah, some of these episodes are not quite so good, but I've got some really good stuff to look forward to. So that's been a lot of fun. I can tell from what John's been posting on Goodreads that I seem to have fallen a little behind him on my reading of Book 5 of Game of Thrones, but I'm still enjoying that immensely, but I'm about a third of the way through Book 5. I know he's reading the combined, so he's a bit ahead of me, except I, of course, still know things he doesn't know from Book 4.
You know nothing.
You're welcome.
Yes, I've gotten to that point where I can see the end coming.
Yes.
So I'm like, yes. Yes, I can get there.
Yes. but yeah, but that's you know, still you know, and I still maintain book 5 is much more enjoyable than book 4, and why the heck he didn't just combine them and split them, I don't understand. So but also on I'm still filling in my sort of back, you know, my back catalog on comics reading. I have now actually read all of Grant Morrison's The Invisibles, which was quite a trip, and I mean that in all senses of the word. It was also extremely enjoyable to read someone who does recognize that Jerry Cornelius is by far the superior creation to Elric from the Michael Moorcock universe, and also the way that, you know, this is definitely a case of a comic book series that you know, is far removed from your standard superhero genre, and at the end is basically challenging the reader to say, this is what we think, and you know, this is what we made of our lives. So what do you want to go out and make of your lives? Which is not the usual thing you expect at the end of a comic book series, but was still extremely enjoyable. On the TV front, really the, yeah, as we've been saying, I mean, there is really not that much to watch at the moment. That's one reason why I'm through season 2 of Farscape. But there is one other thing I picked up in my quest to fill in some of my Japanese anime background. There was a series I've heard of called, well, the English translation is Planets, I will say, because it's Planets with an E between the T and the S. which basically is a wonderful series. I'm about a third of the way into it now. For all of the moon landing babies like me who grew up watching the moon landing, watching Skylab, and assuming that. Once you got out to about 2075, which is when the series was created, there would be jobs in orbit around space, around the planet. And, this is it's a rather wonderful tale of, a space station that looks kind of like the one in 2001, except it's a story about the janitorial crew who are stuck at the bottom of the space station, who have to go around picking up all the space debris, which is a very important thing, of course, because space debris can bring down, shuttles and spaceships and things, but they're kind of at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale as far as orbital politics go. So it's a very fun anime series and a nice little slice of life for the future that some of us assumed would be happening by now, but unfortunately may not be.
Very interesting. Okay, well, let's see. Does that wrap you up then?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. No new movies on my end. Obviously, I didn't see Pacific Rim, and I'm pretty sure that the next movie I'll see, and perhaps the last one for the year, will be The Wolverine. Which I've heard that fans really like it and critics don't, which means that I'll probably like it. But as far as
I will just chime in to say the other. Apparently, the one on my list that's like that is Red 2. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I know that has also come out, but I'm still behind on Red 1. So you can be disappointed on behalf of my family who feels like that's required viewing. But at any rate, I've also been involved in a little bit of family travel, so I've been kind of running all over the place, which has not helped. But TV-wise, I mean, I'm taking advantage a little bit of the fact that there's not as much on TV to not watch things that I don't really want to. But I have watched a few more serials of Doctor Who. I'm getting close to the end of the Fourth Doctor. I think I have one season left with the Fourth Doctor, which I'll get through soon enough. And then another episode or two of The Inside, which I started watching again last summer after finding it finally, and kind of stopped in the middle of the its one and only season, and now I'm kind of picking that back up since there's very little on. However, most of my time, and Edmund, you kind of alluded to it, has been spent either playing games or reading books. And as far as reading books, I think I already said this last time, but I'm significantly further in on the combined book 4 and 5 of Song of Ice and Fire. I am, let's see, according to my Kindle, I am 82% through the combo. So I think I'm pretty close, if not at the point where it's actually just book 5 material now. But it's pretty far along, and certainly things are starting to happen. The funny thing is, I say 82%. It's like, oh, you're really far in, and then you go, yeah, but the combination is something like 2,000 pages, so I'm 400 pages till the end. So, still a ways to go. It's coming in chunks, but the fact is that there's not a whole lot on. And also, I mean, it's kind of like a family thing right now that my son, of all of us, my son is the worst when it comes to sitting and reading. You know, you hand my daughter a stack of books, and if she has nothing else to do that day, she'll probably be done by the end of the day. That's kind of her her thing. And of course, my wife and I are both prolific readers. My son, on the other hand, feels like if someone's going to go to the trouble of telling you a story in an hour and a half and show you the story, why are you going to take a day to read it? So, a little more modern than perhaps we would like. But since he does have to do summer reading for school, we have an enforced 1 hour of reading time per day. Which during the week I miss because I'm at work. But on the weekends, certainly that kind of help out. We all just get together and we have our hour of reading. And so, yeah, that kind of helps me get good chunks of the reading material done. So there we are. There's things I'm looking forward to, though, because apparently the this past week, I guess, about a week ago, as far as when you hear this, the next Fringe book came out. So I definitely want to pick that up pretty soon after I'm done with the Ice and Fire books. But beyond that, I mentioned playing games, and yes, I am, as seems to be the case every summer now that that Assassin's Creed is annualized, yay Ubisoft, I am deep in the latest Assassin's Creed games that came out late last year. Yeah, I'm about something like between 70 and 80% complete on Assassin's Creed 3, the main game, and then I'm concurrently playing the Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation game on my Vita, which I'm somewhere between 80 and 90% complete. And as I was telling Bronstum off mic earlier this evening, you know, my thing is that I get just far enough until I can play it pretty much open world and just do anything I want without any interference of story, and kind of pick and choose when I advance the story, and then I will just literally spend hours upon hours doing all the little side things and, you know, building up my economy or getting new weapons or whatever it might be. And that's pretty much where I am in both of the games right now. In one of them, I'm building up my homestead, and in the other one, I'm going around and gathering the little collectibles that, you know, every game has that you have to go and run around and collect things. But I think what the kicker was finally just getting really comfortable with the controls, since they modified them slightly for this game, and then getting comfortable going back and forth between the console and portable versions. But yeah, I've sunk a lot of time into those because I've just kind of gotten into a good groove with both games. And as I said, there's nothing on TV, so why not do something that's a little more interactive, and then close out the evenings with big chunks of George R. R. Martin. And now I can join the many people who sit back and just grit their teeth every single time he complains about people saying he should write the damn book. I will join my voice to the chorus. Stop wasting time and write the next book. You made a promise when you started page one of book one. Finish what you started. Thank you. Signed, me. But yeah, that's been pretty much it. I mean, the good and the bad thing about all of the about constantly having a backlog of games is that eventually I have plenty to play, but then I get into one game and then that's all I want to play for, you know, a few weeks on end. I don't have the gamer ADD that like Rob on Orange Lounge Radio complains about. So that's about it for me. Yeah, I like to complete the games, the whole thing. He, you know, his whole thing is that he'll play a few hours and then it's like, ooh, shiny, new game. And then, you know, he plays a little bit. When he completes a game, it's like a better moment. But my games pile up because I have to see them through. So, besides, it's just setting me up for Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah, there you go.
Pirate Assassins. You can't go wrong. But at any rate, yes, that definitely, it's better than watching Da Vinci's Demons, right? Why watch it when you can play it? Yeah.
Oh, it was fun to watch it, too.
Did they jump off the top of roofs and stab people? No. Not often,
yes,
anyway.
Not
the same time. I corrected myself. Clearly there is an influence. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, there was.
All right, well, let's see. Wow, kind of ran out of stuff. Yeah, I mean, certainly there were other things.
We were dealing with our standard roundtable stuff, and we could circle back to the stuff we all mentioned at the opening. As much of a silly exercise as it is every year, and as much as there is always stuff that annoys us, and we try to ignore it because it's just a silly Hollywood awards show, I do have to say this is one of those years where I was quite honestly stunned, and it was partially because I hadn't realized that FX aside from American Horror Story, has apparently been on the outs with the Emmys for quite some time, but I found it absolutely ridiculous that The Americans did not get more recognition than it did, because, you know, as I've said on previous podcasts, as far as new series, you know, just regardless of what we're reviewing or not reviewing, I mean, the Americans and Hannibal were my two breakout shows this year, and for it to, I know it got, I know it was Margot Martindale and one other, which I can't even remember, but, you know, I knew it was, you know, it was a long shot for a drama series, but for not one of Kerry Russell or Matthew Rhys or Noor Emmerich to get recognition in the acting categories was just absolutely stunning to me. And, you know, much as I know this is sort of, you know, a silly circular discussion, because, yeah, you know, the Emmys is much about politics, and obviously, you know, yes, they wanted to acknowledge Netflix, because Netflix can show their shows when they're off the air. It still just annoyed the heck out of me. And yeah, there's another series that got ignored that I'll leave to Bronze Thumb. it was still just another acknowledgement that, that those awards are not about acknowledging the talent, because, you know, yes, there was a lot of good stuff out there, but that was one of those where, no, I wasn't expecting you to get acknowledged in all of those categories, but at least one of them, please. So.
Yeah, I think it's becoming more and more common that when the Emmy nominees are getting announced, if you want to find a crop of really, really good shows to catch up on or to watch in the future, whatnot, you don't look at what got nominated. You find all of the snub lists.
Yeah, yes. Right?
the ones that really, really rankled me were Orphan Black and Hannibal.
Yes.
Say what you will about Orphan Black as a show, like as a whole, Tatiana Maslany deserved a nomination. She deserved to be all the nominations.
That's right.
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic. And meanwhile, I will still stand by my thing that Hannibal is the best new show of the past 12 months and one of the best things on TV right now. It deserved writing awards. It deserved performance awards. Like, Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen are just both phenomenal in completely different ways. The cannibalistic serial killer is the calmest, most together person in the show. and he deserves like so much kudos for playing that character in a way that is subtle and convincing and menacing and stuff like that, and at the same time completely different to Anthony Hopkins and Brian Cox. And meanwhile, mm-hmm. Hugh Dancy has taken going insane to a whole new level. I think I'm suddenly imagining like a short film or something where it's just like Hugh Dancy and Summer Glau having a crazy off. That would be entertaining. I also reckon David Slade deserves. I'm not sure if he got nominated for Awake, for an episode direction. He deserved one for that episode, and he deserved one for the pilot of Hannibal, because it's still one of the most gorgeous looking things I've seen on TV in a while. So yeah, those were the big snubs. Arrested Development deserved more love than it got. And then there are a few of the shows that did get nominated, that continue to get nominated, where I just look at it, just really Modern Family, like year after year after year after year, when they basically do the exact same thing year after year after year, is frustrating as all get out. And I'm not going to be surprised if there's a John Cryer incident this year as well. Because, God, that was... You can't tell me that wasn't one of the most frustrating things you've ever seen at an award show, outside of maybe the whole visual effects thing at the Oscars.
Yeah, I fully underscore second your comment about when it comes to TV, just look at what the Emmys don't nominate.
Yeah.
That's the show. Look at the snub list. Those are the shows you should be watching. Everything else are the shows that maybe 2 or 3 years ago you should have been watching. In some cases. I mean, aren't there some mm-hmm. shows on the list of that you're like, wow, again, or their best season was a while ago. But anyway,
yeah,
that's the way it is. But yes, I mean, we all know that Edmund loved the Americans in its first season,
yeah.
And even I can kind of tell that that was an oversight, and certainly Hannibal had the huge amount of praise for its cast and its writing, and where is all of that? And I think we all agree on Orphan Black that the first season had its ups and downs, but none of us had any complaints about the performance of Tatiana Maslany. So certainly that those three are way up at the top of the list. And I think that, you know, I'd even go so far as to say, where is the kudos for some of the cast members of Fringe?
That was just the thing where in terms of past history, unfortunately, I mean, I knew because of the constant overlook of the Fringe cast, I really wanted Tatiana Maslany to get nominated, but I knew it was unlikely. What got to me with the Americans was I was, because of Homeland's, you know, success in its first season, I really thought the Americans, was not going to have a problem. And, you know, not that it was going to win, but I just kind of assumed nominations. And then it wasn't until it came out and people started going over the nomination, the snub list, you know, that I discovered that, you know, yes, I mean, except for obviously American Horror Story this year, you know, that FX has been sort of like roundly ignored. It was like, oh, great. So it just depends on, you know, which network you're on and what, you know, I think in terms of Hannibal, what your scheduling is. Oh, it was just a mid-season replacement. It wasn't on long enough, you know, sort of to get the buzz or be, you know, considered important enough. And, you know, and so it's, you know, once again, I mean, you know, I mean, I think it's sort of one of those cases where in my case, you know, I tend to ignore them. But when something like Homeland breaks through and then I sort of think like, oh, they're going to start recognizing stuff. Then it's like, no, they're not. They're just going to go back to their usual politics. So.
Yeah, I heard someone make the comment that it looks like Maslany is destined to become the new John Noble.
Hmm.
The person who really deserves a nomination, if not a win, and is not going to get it because of this this bias against any against genre and style things that don't fit this very narrow square.
Yeah, it's not a big enough network. It's not seen by enough people, you know, despite the fact that they stuck him in a small room at Comic-Con, and guess what? They overflowed. Anyway.
Well, I mean, here we are, right? We're looking at, once again, a list of shows that should have been given their fair due, and they're not. And what can you do?
Well, what we can do is give them their fair due here, which
that's
is what we
right,
try to do.
Which we will do over and over and over again. And next time, we're going to once again give a little more love to Continuum, The Newsroom, and Covert Affairs, and probably a few of our quick hits as well. And then we'll see where time and interest takes us from there forward. But we're going to go ahead and let this one wrap up a little short, but why not? Nothing wrong with that. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...